Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Word association with John MacArthur.
I use the complete idiot's guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior high.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Story time here on Wretched Radio. Why? Why a very lengthy story about this? Because you know this person. This is Wretched Radio. The Atlantic, they did a lulu of a piece of work about a 14-page document describing, 22-page document. 30 years ago, Romania deprived thousands of babies of human contact. You're still wondering, what does this have to do with me? This happens to be, we're going to go on a journey here, a story of a young man who was in a Romanian orphanage for 18 years and what his life was like and what life was like for the family who adopted him. You know an adopted family, don't you? For years have been encouraging the church, if we are not prepared to walk alongside of a couple who adopts a child for life, then we shouldn't be encouraging people to adopt anybody. And this story will make that crystal clear. So this will be a little bit unusual. Would like to read to you great big chunks from an article that spends a fair amount of time talking about brain science and why it is that children who experienced trauma, they don't need to be in a Romanian orphanage. They just need to be traumatized. They needed to be in a situation where they couldn't trust big people, especially before the age of 2, how their brains get rewired and how it manifests itself. And you will hear those manifestations in this story that, quite honestly, this is why we Christians adopt, because it breaks our heart. But we Christians need to be aware that there are people who have adopted kids just like Isidore. For the first 3 years of life, he lived at the hospital. The dark-eyed, black-haired boy, born June 20th, 1980, had been abandoned when he was a few weeks old. The reason was obvious to anyone who bothered to look. His right leg was a bit deformed. After a bout of illness, probably polio, he'd been tossed into a sea of abandoned infants in the Socialist Republic of Romania. This is near the time of the change in that regime from Ceausescu, finally, to freedom. But this young man lived under Ceausescu and his system of just burying orphans. If they died, fine, because he didn't want his country to have a black eye. Back to the article. In films of the period documenting orphan care, you see nurses like assembly line workers swaddling newborns out of a seemingly endless supply. With muscled arms and casual indifference, they sling each one onto a square of cloth, expertly knotted into a tidy package, and stick it at the end of a row of silent, worried-looking babies. The women don't coo or sing to them. You see the small faces trying to fathom what's happening as their heads whip by during the wrapping maneuvers. Here's what happens to these children. They received no actual tender, loving care. They did not bond with anybody. They didn't even have it fractured. They were fractured from a relationship with their birth mother. Now these adults show total indifference, regularly feeding them backwards. Not feeding them in their arms with a bottle, they turn them away from them. So it's chest to back, and then they feed them without even looking into their eyes. What does that do to a child? The neuroscience aspect of this particular article did some revealing of some studying that has been done on the subject of what is known as reactive attachment disorder, a malady that I believe to virtually every child that has been adopted, there's been a trauma, and will exhibit something, varying levels and degrees of reactive attachment disorder. This will help you to understand what that looks like. They took 100 kids that were attached to a parent. And they brought them into a room one at a time with their caregiver. There's a bunch of kids in a room, enter a child who's attached to mommy, who walks the child in by hand, releases the child to play with the other kids, but then after a little bit, leaves and a stranger comes into the room. They did that with 100 kids who were attached. They also did it with 100 orphanage kids. Here's what happened. With the children who were attached, 100 out of 100 looked freaked out. The adopted group, when their caregiver left and a stranger entered the room, 3 were disturbed. Why? Because this is the way it is. I'm not attached to anyone. I'm my own self, my own island. I am Simon and Garfunkel before they even thought about writing about being an island. Back to our story. In his hospital, the southern Carpathian mountain town of Sighetu, Isidore would have been fed by a bottle stuck into his mouth and propped against the bars of a crib. Well past the age when children in the outside world began tasting solid food and then feeding themselves, he and his age mates remained on their backs, sucking from bottles with widened openings to allow the passage of a watery gruel. Without proper care or physical therapy, the baby's leg muscles wasted. At 3, he was deemed deficient and transferred across town to a home hospital for irrecoverable children. Nice. Very nice. The cement fortress emitted no sounds of children playing, though as many as 500 lived there at one time. It stood mournfully aloof from the cobblestone streets and sparkling river of the town where Eli Wiesel had been born in 1928 and enjoyed a happy childhood before the Nazi deportations. The windows on Isidore's third floor ward have been fitted with prison bars. In boyhood, he stood there often, gazing down on an empty mud yard enclosed by barbed wire fence. Through bare branches in winter, Isidore got a look at another hospital and sat right in front of his own and concealed it from the street. Real children, children wearing shoes and coats, children holding their parents' hands, came and went from that hospital. No one from his hospital was ever taken there, no matter how sick. Not even if they were dying. Like all of the boys and girls who lived in the hospital for irrecoverables, he was served nearly inedible, watered-down food at long tables where naked children on benches banged their tin bowls. He grew up in overcrowded rooms where his fellow orphans endlessly rocked. Ah, the rocking. You've seen this at the zoo when the fish swim back and forth. They're self-soothing. That's what children do when they have no attention. They self-soothe themselves in an iron crib. Out-of-control children were dosed with adult tranquilizers administered through unsterilized needles, while many who fell ill received transformations of unscreened blood, hepatitis B, and AIDS ravaged the Romanian orphanages. Destined to spend his childhood in that building until he was 18 years old. This past Christmas Day was the 30th anniversary of the public execution of the firing squad of Romania's last communist dictator, Nicolae Ceaușescu, who'd ruled for 20 years. In 1990, the outside world discovered his network of child gulags. There were 170,000 abandoned infants, children, and teens, like Isidore, 170,000. He'd curtailed contraception and abortion. He just wanted a numbers boom to show that his country was thriving, imposed tax penalties on people who were childless and celebrated as heroin mothers, women who gave birth to 10 or more. Parents who couldn't possibly handle another baby might call their new arrival Ceaușescu's child, as in, let him raise it. To house this generation of unwanted children, Ceaușescu ordered the construction of conversion of hundreds of structures around the country. Signs displayed the slogan, "The state can take better care of your child than you can." At age 3, abandoned children were sorted. Future workers would get clothes, shoes, food, some schooling, while deficient children wouldn't get much of anything in their hospitals. The Soviet science of defectology viewed disabilities in infants as intrinsic and uncurable. Even children with treatable issues, like being cross-eyed or anemic or had a cleft lip, were classified as unsalvageable, living in unspeakable conditions, skeletal, splashing in urine on the floor, caked with feces. They were discovered and filmed by foreign news programs, including ABC's 2020, which broadcast Shame of a Nation in 1990. Perhaps you saw it. Like the liberators of Auschwitz 45 years before, early visitors to the institutions have been haunted by what they saw. Quote, we flew in by helicopter over the snow, landing after midnight, accompanied by Romanian bodyguards carrying Uzis, said a pediatrician who went in to help the children. We walk into pitch black, freezing cold building and discover there are youngsters lurking about. They're tiny, but older. Something weird, like trolls, filthy, stinking. They're chanting in a drone-like way, gibberish. We open a door and find a population of what are called cretins. Now it's known as congenital iodine deficiency syndrome. Stunting, brain growth, and development. I don't know how old they are, she said, but they're 3 feet tall, and they could be teenagers the size of 6 or 7 year olds with no secondary sexual characteristics. These are children with underlying genetic disorders lying in cages. And that was the life of Isidore. And we are going to now hear what that did to him and how that affected his adopted family and what you should do about it. Next on Wretched Radio. Hold on to your socks. This might just blow them off. The Masters Academy International, brilliant on every level. There are thousands of empty pulpits around the globe. What have they done? Established mini seminaries, training centers in 16 nations to equip indigenous men to fill those pulpits and rightly divide the word of truth. But the Masters Academy International has an even higher goal. This is from Samara, Russia.
The objective is not only to place the preachers of local churches on a biblical basis. The goal is not just to give them knowledge. The highest priority is to change the character, to create a minister of a completely different level than it was before, a preacher of a new generation.
Amazing. Would you please consider supporting the Masters Academy International in their endeavor to do just that? Wretched.org/pastor. Wretched.org/pastor.
It's another day and another Wretched Radio. Hey, we're grateful and thankful for those of you who reach out to us with your wretched stories, with your questions, your comments, your conundrums, and yes, even your snarks. You can contact us in a couple of different ways. First, you can send us an email at idea@wretched.org, or you can leave us a voicemail on Beep Talk at 1-877-282-BEEP. Whichever way you decide to reach out to us, know that we are always looking forward to hearing from you. Like this recent email we received from Andrew, who says, I just wanted to share how helpful I found the Road Trip to Truth series to be. I'm a freshman in college and was able to talk my postmodern friend through the logical fallacies of postmodernism. Hey, thanks, Andrew. We love reading emails just like that. So send us those questions, those wretched stories, those comments, those conundrums, and again, even those snarks at idea@wretched.org, or leave us a voicemail at 1-877-282-BEEP. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Another amazing story from Eastern Europe, Tomorrow Clubs.
One of the kids that came, I was a 12-year-old girl, you know, her parents were both alcoholics. The leader said, well, you know, why don't you invite your mother to come? She started coming, and at first it was really just to get gifts for her younger kids who had been taken away from her. But, you know, she'd come, and she'd hear little pieces of the gospel, and she'd feel the love of the leaders that were there. She started drinking a little bit less and started coming to the church, and then the church started trying to help them, and they'd go to visit the home, and the father, I mean, he was just a hopeless alcoholic who really couldn't even leave the house. Believe it or not, even the father stopped drinking, and now the whole family has come to the Lord. Now this family operates the Tomorrow Club.
If you'd like to hear more stories like that, and who of us wouldn't, please support your own Tomorrow Club. $30 a month, 30 disciples in Eastern Europe. Visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Know your church fathers. Clement of Rome lived from AD 30 to 100, was a student of the Apostle Peter, and served as the Bishop of Rome. He wrote a letter to the troubled church in Corinth, warning against envy and immorality. emphasizing humility and repentance. His letter continued to be read during worship services for 80 years. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Heartbreaking? Yes. Necessary? Definitely. This is Wretched Radio. You attend a local evangelical church, which means the odds are high. You know a family that adopted a child, which means you have a family in your congregation who most likely needs your help. Why? Because of a little something called reactive attachment disorder, the Atlantic magazine, for some reason, going back in time over four decades to Romania, circa 1980, tracing the life of a boy named Isidore, who had languished in a Romanian orphanage for 18 years, showing the effects of what that does to a child, using him, if you will, as a avatar for all of the other kids that suffer with similar maladies because they have been traumatized. They never rightly attached to any sort of parental figure. Along comes a lovely couple, Marlis and Danny Ruckel, to adopt the boy along with their three bio kids. And that is when the fun began. And by hearing this story, you and I will get a little glimpse into the world of the families in our church who have adopted children, whether from Romania or not, from the Atlantic. Marlis homeschooled the girls, but Isidore insisted on going to school, where he quickly learned English. His canny ability to read the room put him in good stead with the teachers, but at home, he was constantly irritated. Suddenly insulted, he'd storm off to his room and tear things apart. He shredded books, posters, family pictures, and then stood at the balcony to sprinkle the pieces into the yard. The mom said, if I had to leave for an hour, by the time I got home, everyone would be upset. He did this, he did that. He didn't like the girls, the bio daughters. Marlis and Danny had hoped to expand the family fun and happiness by bringing in another child, but the newest family member almost never laughed. He didn't like to be touched. He was vigilant, all RAD signs, hurt, proud. By about 14, he was angry about everything, Marlis said. He decided he wanted to grow up and be the American president. When he found out that wouldn't be possible because of his foreign birth, he said, fine, I'll go back to Romania. And that's when that started. His goal of returning to Romania, we thought it was a good thing for him to have a goal. So he said, sure, get a job, save your money, and when you're 18, you can move back to Romania. So Isidore went to work at a fast food restaurant. Those were tough years, said Mom. I was walking on eggshells, trying not to set him off. The girls were so over it. It was me that they were mad at for bringing Isidore into the family and being so whipped by him. They'd say, Mom, all you do is try to fix him. I was so focused on helping him adjust, I lost sight of the fact that the other children were scraping by with a fraction of my time. Need to know that if you've got bio kids and you're thinking about adopting, that will happen in your home. Danny and I tried taking him to therapy, but he refused to go back. He said, I don't need therapy. You two need therapy. Why don't you go? So we did. He'd say, I'm fine when nobody's in the house. The problem was, it was not his house. It was our house. It was a family house. And this boy, because of orphanage issues, adoption issues, sought to destroy their happy home. Every time we got into another fight, Isidore remembers, I wanted one of them to say, Isidore, we wish we had never adopted you, and we're going to send you back to the hospital. But they didn't say it. Why did he want that? Because he feared attachment to a caregiver. Why? Because he was once attached to a caregiver, even if it was in utero. What happened? He was traumatically taken from his caregiver, scalded. And now along comes the loving Christian family to love on the kid and to be that caregiver, and the caregiver thinks this is enemy number one. If I get close to these people, they are going to wound me again. It's primordial. They don't articulate it, but it is. And that's the dynamic that many people bring into their home, and you should know about it if you know a family that is adopted. Unable to process his family's affection, he just wanted to know where he stood. It was simpler in the orphanage, whether you were either being beaten or you weren't. I responded better to being smacked around, he said. In America, they had rules and consequences. So much talk. I hated Let's Talk About This. And that's all we have. Hey, let's talk about this. This kid hated it. As a child, I never heard words like you are special or you are our kid. Later, if your adoption parents tell you words like that, you feel, okay, whatever, thanks. I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't know what you want from me or what I'm supposed to do for you. When banished to his room for rudeness or cursing or being mean to the girls, Isidore would stomp up the stairs and blast Romanian music or bang on his door from the inside with his fists or a shoe. Marlis blamed herself. He wanted to go back to his first mother, a woman who didn't want him, a woman he didn't remember. When I took him to the bank to set up the savings account, the bank official filling out the form asked Isidore, "What's your mother's maiden name?" I opened my mouth to answer, but he immediately said, "Maria." That's his birth mother's name. Imagine how Marlis felt. Well, young man goes back to Romania, only to discover that his mother was indeed, his birth mother was glad to see him because she thought maybe he had some money or could build them a house. And he found himself discombobulated. He found himself confused. On Isidore's 18th birthday, Marlis baked a cake, wrapped gifts, a photo album documenting their life together, his first day in America, his first dental appointment, his first job, his first shave. She took the presents to the house where she'd heard her son was staying. Why? Because, well, he'd been kicked out of the house. The person who answered the door agreed to deliver it. When Isidore got back in the middle of the night, Marlis says, "We heard a car squealing around the cul-de-sac, then a loud thud against the door and a car squealing away. I went down and opened the door. It was the photo album." Oof. Oof. Imagine how that family felt. He returns to Romania. When actually, believe it or not, he had petitioned 2020 to go back and follow him. He did. He met his mom, who seemed like she had an agenda. Quote, "My birth family scared me, especially Maria," Isidore says. "I had a feeling I could get trapped there." A few weeks later, he was back to America, working in a fast food restaurant. But he kept finding himself longing for Romania. So he wanted to go back. He wanted to stay. He ends up moving out. The family is totally disrupted. The family has been left in a wake of devastation from this young man who now moves to Denver, Colorado. More from The Atlantic. Isidore, living independently, is a success story among the survivors. Oh, that's a success story? Yep, it is. Why? Because he was able to move out and pay his rent in a little bit of a Romanian commune in Colorado, and he's able to hold down a job. He says he doesn't miss what he never knew, what he doesn't even perceive. Perhaps it's like color blindness. Do people with color blindness miss green? Adopted kids don't miss love because they don't even know what it is. He focuses on the task before him and does his best to act the way humans expect other humans to act. Quote, "You can be the smartest orphan in the hospital, but you're missing things. I'm not a person who can be intimate. It's hard on a person's parents because they show you love and you can't return it." He wants to live like a normal human. He regularly consents to donning the mantle of former orphan to give talks around the U.S. about Romanian institutionalization of little kids. He's even working on a screenplay to tell his story. But Isidore's life will never be one with wife and children. Isidore was obliged to approach the heavy wooden door when he discovered that his parents were in a car accident. He returns to their home, the door against which he'd hurled the photo album that mom had made for his birthday, the door he'd slammed behind him 100 times, the door he'd battered and kicked when he was locked out. He knocked and stood on the front step, head hanging, heart pounding. He thought his parents had died in a car accident. Unsure of whether he'd be admitted. "I abandoned them. I neglected them. I put them through hell," he thought. The prickly stems of burgundy red roses wrapped in dark leaves and plastic bristled in his arms. And then they opened the door. Why? Because in this instance, their orphan had come home. Why? Because when he discovered that his adopted parents were potentially dead, something actually stirred in him. He had a feeling. Now, that feeling took 20 years to develop, but he realized that he had it. And now that family is seeking to try to figure out life going forward with their adopted child, their bio kids, and their other adopted children. That's standard fare. That's very common. And it might not be that extreme. It might actually be more extreme, frankly. But that is what adopted parents are going through in your church. If you know one of them, please get into their world. Get into their lives. Ask questions without commentary. Ask them how you can help. What can you do to aid them in trying to help a child who's got a brain that has been wrongly wired, understand what it means to be attached and loved? In other words, it takes a church to raise an adopted child. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hanks. Well, a new poll released yesterday is pretty telling of the lies being force-fed to the country right now. The survey conducted by Competitive Edge Research found that 74% of respondents are strongly opposed to white privilege training and CRT curriculum that's being introduced in K-12 schools. 74%. That number doesn't exactly line up with the propaganda that's being touted by all the political extremists right now. Only 6%, however, were in favor of this type of woke training. It's a shot across the brow of all of the school boards and school districts and state governments that have implemented these woke policies. Dividing our communities based on skin color has no place in America. Well, outrage is reportedly sparked in Pakistan after a Muslim man attempted to sexually assault a 10-year-old Christian girl. Protesters clashed with local police in Pakistan after receiving the news of the attempted assault. The victim was heard screaming for help by her family, who surrounded the house of the molester before police arrived. Things quickly got out of control, and police and members of the victim's family were sent to the hospital for medical attention. Please, as we tell you all the time, pray for our brothers and sisters abroad. Well, Mike Freeman of USA Today is pushing for the cancellation of a planned Promise Keepers function, which is scheduled in Dallas for later this year, because of the CEO's biblical views on homosexuality and gender roles. Promise Keepers CEO Ken Harrison did a radio interview recently where he discussed his convictions, which prompted Freeman to write an opinion piece arguing that Harrison has no place near an NFL team, and he defined Harrison's views as hate speech. The event in Dallas is expected to host 80,000 men during July. And after threatening for years, the Equality and Human Rights Commission quietly decided not to publish national transgender guidelines for schools, which would have forced girls' schools to accept transgender students in the UK. Teachers also would have been forced to call transgender students by their newly chosen names or risk breaking the law. A spokesperson for the commission said ultimately there wasn't enough case law available to publish the guidelines and provide schools with clarity. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 732 AD. At the Battle of Tours, Charles Martel turns back the Muslim invasion of Europe. As Islam decimated the church in North Africa and the Middle East, Europe became the new center of Christianity. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not persuaded yet? This is Wretched Radio. 20 signs that a child is suffering from a malady known as reactive attachment disorder, although I would argue with you it's not really disordered in that. When a child does not rightly bond with a parent, their brain does not get wired rightly. That's just the way it works organically. They don't learn what it means to trust a big person. They don't learn what it means to feel loved, to feel safe. So they have to raise themselves. Whether it's in a crib, an orphanage, foster system, they don't need big people. They need to be on guard. And if a big person comes along to try to swoop them up, wrap their arms around him or her and love on them, it's the worst thing in the world. So fancy that. The adoptive parent wants to do the nicest thing, love a kid. The kid thinks that's the worst thing. There's a little recipe for disaster, and so it is. We have countless adoptive parents who are living with kids that don't want to love them back. Now, it's slightly more complex than that, in that the kid actually does want to love the parents back, but the kid can't. Because if he does, he might get abandoned again, and he doesn't want to live through that pain again. That's the dynamic. And there are signs of this, and this is... We did this, I believe, 4 years ago, shared this list of 20 signs of reactive attachment disorder. And I don't know how many views the video has had on the YouTube machine, but it's a lot. It's hundreds of thousands. Why? Because people are trying to figure out what's going on with my adopted child. This will give you a little peek into their world. And I want you to imagine this is your child. Because if you don't do that, you're going to go, well, that's not such a big, that's not awful. I want you to imagine this. These children are superficially engaging and charming. You get a sense they're not shooting straight. You feel like you're raising Eddie Haskell. My, Mrs. Cleaver, what a lovely dress you're wearing today. Well, thank you, Adopt-O-Mom. That's a lovely banana bread. But you sense it's not genuine. Number 19, as we count down. A lack of eye contact on your terms. The closer you get to them, the further their eyes go away from you. Why? Because that's too intimate. And so if you've got an adopted child and you want to look into the child's eyes, the child's not going to look at you, especially if you get close to them. Why? Because that's what bonded people do. Imagine that's your child. Indiscriminately affectionate with strangers. They tear up your home. But when you go to the store and they see a complete stranger, they act all wonderful. And the stranger goes, what an amazing child. Worse than that, you take your child to church after they've pretty much made a mess of your home. And they're wonderful to everybody. And they think that this adopted child is the most amazing child that they've ever met. And then they hear you complain about the child. You're the problem, is the conclusion. Why? Because they're indiscriminately affectionate with strangers. 17, they are not affectionate on parents' terms. They won't kiss you, hug you, hold your hand. Nope, they might on their terms, maybe, but not on yours. Now remember, these are probably young couples. Maybe these are couples who couldn't have a child. And they bring this child into and all they want to do is love on the kid. That's all they want to do is just love on the kid. Number 16, destructive of self, others, and material things. They will hurt their bodies, bang their heads, cut themselves, hurt themselves, do odd things with tools to their body, and they will do that to your home. Cruelty to animals, lying about the obvious, stealing, no impulse control. Lack of conscience. Imagine that. You bring a child into your home and they never feel bad about anything terrible that they do, and they do lots of it because it just didn't develop. That's the importance of taking care of a baby right there. If you are a mom and you just had a baby, might I encourage you, you love on that baby. You spend as much time as you possibly can with that baby. You answer every cry. This latest trend, at least it was a trend, I think, when we had our oldest child. Just let them cry it out. They'll learn. Yeah, here's what they learned. They can't trust adults. Here's what they learned. They have to soothe themselves. That's not what a baby needs. Well, don't they have to grow up to soothe themselves? Yeah, when they grow up, normally. But in the meantime, babies need their cries answered. They need their bellies filled. And this trend, well, just ignore them. They'll cry it out. We did that once for about 6 minutes. I think that's how long it lasted. Couldn't stand hearing the cries of our daughter. Had to go in and rescue her. And that's what you should do. And you should do that for them, because if you don't and they don't get it anywhere, They're not going to be rightly bonded. And in my estimation, by the way, we are seeing that a lot in our culture today. If you've wondered why so much bad childhood behavior is going on, these are kids who had bio parents in the home, but didn't give them what they needed, attention, time, love. They didn't have it. And so they are growing up with some of these signs. This is a societal issue. If you've got kids growing up without impulse control and a lack of conscience, lying about anything they feel like, what sort of a world is that? It's a world of kids who didn't have mom taking care of them. Number 10, abnormal eating patterns. And maybe you say, well, that's not a big deal, just cope. Well, okay, cope with that and about 75 other things. A preoccupation with fire. They like to set things ablaze, including your stuff. Poor peer relationships. Preoccupation with blood and gore. Preoccupation with bodily functions. That makes for a laugh riot. If having a bedpan changed is your idea of a nightmare, imagine the bedpan gets thrown against the wall and used as art. Finger art. Clean that up again, again, and again, and you've got yourself a picture of what some people are going through who have adopted children. In varying degrees, a kid will find himself on this list, and we need to know about it if we are going to be the church for these families. Persistent nonsense questions and chatter. Well, you just want your life to be perfect. No. This is just one more thing. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that with your left hand? Why do you have a left hand? Why don't you wear your ring on your right hand? What color is that ring? Why is it a circle? Where did you get that ring? How much was that ring? And you get hit with about 400 questions. Why? Because they need attention, but they don't want connection. Persistent nonsense questions and chatter, nonstop demanding of affection, I can't even read my own writing. Triangulation of adults. Oh, that's one that's fun for parents. The kid gets in between the two, acts like a saint for dad, acts like a devil for mom. Mom and dad can't find themselves agreeing on what to do with this child. One thinks he's wonderful, the other thinks he's a nightmare. Go. False allegations of abuse. So take all of these things, and then the child accuses you of abusing him when you're not. And finally, on our last of reactive attachment disorders, they create chaos. Why? Because to them, that's calm. If everything's out of control, they're safe. When everything is ordered, and they've got a place, and they've got a role, That's danger Will Robinson, and so they go about the business of trying to create utter chaos. Now you have a picture of the adopted family. Now, I grant you, not every kid exhibits all of these, certainly, but there will be effects. I personally have not met adoptive families, and I've met many of them, who would say, nope, nothing. Just like raising my bio kids. No difference whatsoever. And I even hear high-profile evangelicals. Hey, adoption, we got to be adopting. You know, of course it has unique challenges, but we got to be adopting. Whoa, back up to that. There's some unique challenges part that you just glossed over. I read this all the time. We're high-profile evangelicals, encouraging the church to adopt. They just kind of do a drive-by. What you just heard. Well, yeah, sometimes these things happen, but, you know, you just learn to deal with it. Yeah, and some are better equipped than others, which is why I've said before, and I'll say again, if this list is daunting to you, you might want to just slow your roll because you may not be prepared for adoption, especially if you have bio kids in the house. You might be, but you might not be. And your first priority is your marriage and your kids that are already in your home. You maybe are prepared for these things, and if you are, adopt away. But church, let us be aware and let us get behind these parents and support them, because you and I might struggle with one of these 20 issues. They're dealing with the whole enchilada. This is Wretched Radio. What does a young lady experiencing a crisis pregnancy sound like?
I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Everybody wanted me to have an abortion.
Everybody wanted her to have an abortion, but she visited a preborn life center, saw a free ultrasound of her baby.
I'm going to keep my baby, and I'm going to be a great mom.
80% of the time, a woman in crisis sees an image of her child via a free ultrasound at a preborn center, they choose life. How many lives could you save per month? The answer is double. During the month of May, Preborn has received a generous gift of matching grants. Every dollar you give to Preborn will be matched. So $28 for an ultrasound will now provide two ultrasounds. How many lives could you save? Visit preborn.org/wretched.
After a year of social distancing and shutdowns and stay-at-home orders, it looks like finally maybe we might be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. But one thing we've been extremely grateful for here at Wretched is the support of all of our gospel partners. Not only have we been able to maintain producing the same amount of content, we've actually produced even more. Our flagship programs, Wretched Radio and Wretched TV, have never missed a single episode, and we've been fortunate enough to produce new programming like Road Trip to Truth Season 2, the upcoming Wretched Worldview with Dr. Owen Strand, the latest addition to the Drive-By audio series, Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3, a new line of Bible study and homeschool curriculum, plus a brand new Biblical Counseling TV series currently in development. And none of this would have ever been possible without the support of our gospel partners. So would you please prayerfully consider joining our mission of reaching millions of people all over the world with the gospel? Just visit wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to the number 44321.
Yes, you want to save money because, after all, you're a Christian and that's what we want to do, save money, but never at the expense of our family's health and peace of mind should a family member fall ill. That is why I'd like to commend you MediShare, the gold standard of healthcare sharing. You will save, on average, $500 per month as a family. How much will you save? It takes 2 minutes. 844-34-BIBLE. And if you think, well, this isn't very good, you get free telehealth services with MediShare, a huge network of doctors with MediShare, and great customer support. And fellow Christians will pray for you. MediShare, 400,000 members strong. Peace of mind and savings. Simply call 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
Books of the Bible. The Book of Proverbs is a collection of memorable sayings meant to encourage wisdom for godly living. Each proverb is to be understood on its own, and then in light of the rest of the book, and finally the whole Bible. When you desire wisdom, look to the Book of Proverbs, which reminds us that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Girl, scrub your bookshelf. This is Wretched Radio. Now, I don't mean that in a Howard University kind of way, where you get rid of all literature from the past that was written by white people. No, I don't mean that, but you would do well as an evangelical to scrub your shelves of books that are bad. Girl, Wash Your Face is one such book. 2 years ago, give or take, I lose track of these pragmatic trends. It was all the rage. Rachel Hollis encouraging girls to just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, quit your whining, and be all that you can be because you're amazing. Of course, that sings to people. Joel Osteen learned that. Oprah Winfrey has made billions teaching that. And so Rachel Hollis jumped on that money train, wrote a terrible book. Many people commented and critiqued it, and then received critiquing for critiquing such a bad book, saying you shouldn't critique things. And they were vilified as the bad guys. Well, as is typically the case, time reveals the truth of the matter. For instance, those of us who critiqued the purpose-driven life 20 years ago, we weren't shocked when Saddleback announced, yeah, we've got female pastors now. Three of them. We just ordained them. It was an historic night. Yeah, because they've moved away from historical orthodoxy. That's why, because this is a sin. Now, this is an ongoing sin issue that you have at Saddleback Church. Three women as pastors in unrepentant sin, and the pastors who laid hands on them giving approval to an ongoing sin inside of a church. Some of us weren't shocked. By the way, I look forward to all of the people who said, don't criticize the purpose-driven life just because it's not your cup of tea. I look forward to them saying, oops, I'll wait. In the meantime, Rachel Hollis wrote a book called Girl, Wash Your Face. The New York Times posted Girl, Wash Your Timeline. Why? Because she posted a TikTok that mentioned her housekeeper who comes twice a week and cleans the toilets. That caused a commentator to say that Rachel Hollis is unrelatable and privileged. Rachel Hollis decided to respond, I quote, you're right. I'm super, I don't like this word. It's the minced oath of the F-bomb. When you do that dance from the 70s, Le Chic, I don't like that word because I think it's a minced oath. She used it, but a lot of people do these days. I'm super bleeping privileged. But also, I worked my bleep off to have the money to have someone come twice a week and clean my toilets. Well, then. That was on TikTok. Quote, what is it about me that made you think I want to be relatable? No, sis. Literally everything I do in my life is to live a life that most people can't relate to. Literally. Every woman I admire in history was unrelatable. Invoking the names of Harriet Tubman, Oprah Winfrey. If my life is relatable to most people, I'm doing it wrong. Now, your grammar ain't great either, but nevertheless, that was the heart of Rachel Hollis. You say, that's pretty bad, but I'm not persuaded. Well, then thanks to the Federalist, surprising article critiquing Rachel Holland in the Federalist, assembled more quotes. Here they are from this best-selling evangelical Bible teacher. I guess that's what she calls herself. I love Jesus, she said in the Facebook post, adding, and I cuss a little. I love Jesus and I drink alcohol. I love Jesus and some of my best friends are gay. I love Jesus and I adore hip-hop music. I love Jesus and I totally read the romance novels where vampires fall in love with librarians or school teachers or female detectives with a tortured backstory. Commentary from the Federalist. Don't miss the message. It isn't I love Jesus and my life isn't squeaky clean. No, it's I love Jesus and I do what I want. You should be the very first of your priorities, says Rachel Hollis. You and only you are ultimately responsible for who you become and how happy you are. And you are meant to be the hero of your own story. Is it any wonder she's so popular? Here's another question that I would ask you to ponder when you read a book like Girl, Wash Your Face. Do you hear the gospel? Did she in this book ever talk about forgiveness of sins, everlasting life, spared from the wrath of God? I suspect not. I didn't read the book. I grant you, didn't need to. I only needed to read some of it to go, this is utter nonsense. Unbiblical presentation of how we are to view ourselves, not with self-love, nor with self-loathing. We should loathe our sins. We should loathe our corruption. We should loathe how fallen we are, but we don't stay in Wormville. Why? Because God loves us anyway. So we have both humility and joy. Same package in the full gospel. The Rachel Hollis gospel would be, no, you just go ahead and love yourself. You just become the best you that you could possibly be. You are amazing, and you can do anything that you want to, which is, of course, the lie of self-esteem. And there you have Rachel Hollis again contorting the gospel, doing Soteriological alchemy. That's right. I just said soteriological alchemy. This is an article from the EFCA, Evangelical Free Church of America, which, by the way, I think I just read a poll. No, I'm going to wait on the poll because I want to make sure I've got it right about their role toward women. I know in Canada it's a big fight right now for the EFCA. Nevertheless, this was an article that was so helpful. Soteriological alchemy thrives when we become bored with the gospel. That is, when we tire of the same old truth and the same old Christ, opting instead for the false freshness, liberalism, social crusading, mysticism, antinomianism, washing your face. That's soteriological alchemy. We've got to mix it up. It's not interesting anymore. Gospel boredom is a failure to know and experience the overwhelming beauty, glory, and majesty of Jesus Christ. When we fail to know who and what he is, we lose interest. And we create weird gospels. Imagine you have access to the most advanced entertainment and communication device on the market, smartphone, computer, whatever, and yet you never learn how to turn on the device or navigate its many systems, tools, applications. No doubt, you would lose interest in the device, never fully appreciating what it can do. Ditto with gospel boredom. Pastor, could I encourage you and challenge you to maybe preach the gospel a little bit differently than perhaps a bit of the rut that you've been stuck in? And so if you're here today and you've never, how's about robustly preaching the gospel, focusing at least on one aspect of it to magnify the greatness of the Lord Jesus Christ? You say, I don't know how to do that. I would encourage you to go read the Puritans. They did. No, the Puritans, they were just feisty. They were fighters. They would write a critique about girl, wash your face. Yeah, they would. But they also preached beautifully about the gospel of Jesus Christ. From this article, when we forget the essentials of the gospel or fail to grasp the wonder of the gospel by exploring the richness of God's word, we lose interest and pursue something we think to be fresh and original. And don't we do that today a lot? Soteriological alchemy thrives on a fragmented and dichotomized gospel. We want a savior without wanting a Lord. We want the benefits of Christ without, you know, Christ himself. We want justification without sanctification. Salvation and lordship are two sides of the same coin, and they go together. But when we're kind of bored with the gospel, we concoct our own. It's soteriological alchemy. It's old country buffet gospel. A little dollop of this, a little whack of that. Put some whipped cream on it. Are they still coming? What was it? What were the numbers? How many streamers did we have this week? When you're seeking a following, when you're bored with the gospel, or frankly, when you don't understand it, you don't preach it. And by the way, that is a read that I think is worthy of our consideration. If somebody knows the gospel, how can they not preach it? I mean, somebody who really knows it. I think about my pathetic self before God saved me. I would have been a soteriological alchemist of the highest order. I would have been pastor seeker sensitive. I am persuaded of it. Why? Because I didn't have a clue about how amazing Jesus is. I did not understand grace. I did not understand the cross, the blood that was shed for sinners. I didn't get it. So what did I want to do? Gussy it up. Make it snappy and entertaining. Why? Because I didn't know the gospel. And I would suggest to you, this is at least worthy of a drive-by consideration. When somebody never preaches the gospel, you got to ask, do they know the gospel? Because it's my contention, if you do, you preach it. And if you don't, you can't. Now, please note, there are some people who don't know the gospel, but trip over it like a blind knife that finds a squirrel in the shed twice a day. But I would suggest to you, somebody who can't preach the gospel doesn't even know the gospel. Soteriological alchemy. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.